Move now to the third case this morning, United States v. Camarena Salazar.
May it please the Court, good morning. I'm James McKinley with the Federal Defender's Office in Indianapolis. Rodrigo Soto Piedra was sentenced to 210 months imprisonment after pleading guilty to this cocaine conspiracy. It was a low-end guideline sentence calculated using a base offense level 38 as the starting point. The investigation of Mr. Soto Piedra involved a controlled buy and wiretap surveillance that directly linked him or implicated him with respect to buying and selling somewhere in the 10 to 15 kilogram range, 10 to 15 kilos of cocaine, to which the district court piled on more than 150 kilos based on the testimony of a case agent at sentencing who testified that an informant reportedly claimed to have purchased 5 kilograms a week from my client over a 34-week period the year before. And we challenged the sufficiency of that evidence to support a finding of 90% of the cocaine for which my client was held accountable. I submit that the cases of United States versus Robinson, United States versus Palmer, both of which are cited and discussed in the brief, control the issue here in holding that it was clear error to base 95% of a drug amount on an informant's hearsay statements presented at sentencing. And despite the government's attempt to distinguish Robinson and Palmer, I think it's clear from reading those cases together they reflect this court's understandable concern about hearsay testimony being used to ratchet up a sentencing guideline with the dramatic consequences that it had. The cases I submit are both on point, and they are as close to controlling authority as anything I could find, and the government's attempt to distinguish them is insufficient. The government also suggests that the district court was within its authority to rely on the findings made in the pre-sentence report, and that defense somehow failed to meet its burden to come forward with evidence to establish that those descriptions in the pre-sentence report were inaccurate or unreliable. Now, I'd ask the court to be mindful that what's contained in the pre-sentence report here is simply a regurgitation of what the government maintains as the quantity based on the informant's statements. The government's argument ignores the very strong presumption of unreliability that attaches in a situation like this where the information is provided by a government informant with the government's assistance describing past events when that particular informant is not subjected to any type of adversarial testing in the form of cross-examination. In short, I submit the government has failed to meet its threshold burden to establish that this information was sufficiently reliable to begin with. The government also argues that the informant's hearsay allegations were, in fact, corroborated in this case in the form of a reference during one of the wiretap conversations where my client's source is heard on the wiretap describing my client as a good customer. He used to get out up to 5 a week, presumably referring to cocaine. He's talking about dealings in the prior year. But even, you know, looking at that in the context at which it was presented, that statement arguably constitutes nothing more than a description of a good customer that might or that the source is trying to confirm trustworthiness based on his effort to get the other individual to front cocaine. This is some corroboration, but again, what they're talking about here is not sufficient to corroborate the purported acquisition of 5 kilos a week for 34 weeks. It's insufficient point of corroboration to shore up that foundation of reliability that they need to support this type of a factual determination by the court.
Did Soto testify as to how much cocaine he was dealing?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Did he testify?
No, my client did not testify.
So when you have these kind of cases where you have a pre-sentence report which sort of regurgitates what the government says, and then you have this other witness who said five kilos a week for some bunch of time, but you don't have anything from the defendant, what's the district judge to do? Why wouldn't the judge discredit that testimony then?
It's our position. It's the government's burden.
I understand, but why? You have an opportunity to testify and put that in, and other than attacking, put some affirmative evidence on. And have, I mean, his lifestyle was fairly modest for a guy who was supposed to be dealing in millions of dollars of cocaine.
Our position was simply the government didn't meet its burden. We have no obligation to present any evidence. The government failed to rebut that presumption of unreliability. It's simply insufficient to support its finding to ratchet up the guideline.
How about Hernandez? Are you going to address him?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Are you going to address Mr. Hernandez?
Yes. I'm going to defer to Mr. Brodnick on that issue. That's specifically what he's going to be addressing. Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Brodnick.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Tom Brodnick, and I represent the defendant, Miguel Hernandez. My case is similar to Mr. McKinley's in that we're challenging the sufficiency of the evidence with regard to the base offense level for Mr. Hernandez. It is a little different in one respect. And in this case, the district court found that my client was responsible for 14 to 15 kilos of powder cocaine from his own conduct. 14 kilos, as you know, would start him out at a level 32. 15 to 50 gets him to a level 34. However, that skyrocketed based on the district court finding that it was reasonably foreseeable to him that others would turn this cocaine into more than 1.5 kilograms of crack cocaine. And therefore, he started out at a level 38 and was sentenced to 250 months in prison. Now, as this court is well aware, in the case of jointly undertaken activity, which this was with the conspiracy, you're certainly responsible for your own acts, but you are also responsible for, and I will quote, all reasonably foreseeable acts and omissions of others in furtherance of the jointly undertaken criminal activity that occurred during the commission of the offense of commission. And I submit that that is key, that it actually has to occur before you can be responsible for others' conduct. And there is one application note, an example in the application note, that I think is right on point, and it deals with the bank robbery example, that if there is a getaway driver and the bank robbers go into the bank and they assault and injure the teller, the getaway driver, because it's reasonably foreseeable, is responsible for that assault and that injury. But not just because it's reasonably foreseeable, but because it's reasonably foreseeable and the conduct actually occurred. Had no assault taken place, no injury taken place, none of those individuals would be responsible under those relevant conduct guidelines. Certainly reasonably foreseeable, Your Honor, that in all crack cocaine conspiracies, in all cocaine conspiracies, there might be weapons involved. But if no one is injured, or if no one has those weapons, we can't hold those folks liable just because it's reasonably foreseeable. And I would submit that in any powder cocaine conspiracies, Your Honor, it's reasonably foreseeable that someone down the line is going to turn powder into crack. But that's not the standard. The action, the conduct, has to occur before my client can be liable for that. I would submit, Your Honors, that this case has been... There's a very analogous case that this court has decided, and that's the case of United States v. Stott. And in that case, the defendants actually knew of, and in one case, the defendant actually did the cooking of powder into crack. This court held it's not enough to be able to sentence those folks under the crack guidelines unless the government's able to prove a conversion ratio. That conversion ratio is two parts, the percent of the powder to be cooked and the percent of the weight loss during cooking. Now, I would submit to the court that if the government needs to prove a conversion ratio, the conversion actually has to occur. And if Mr. Hernandez's sentence in this case is allowed to stand, we reach the anomalous result that under Stott, a defendant can actually cook and turn powder into crack, but not be sentenced under the crack guidelines. But in this case, no conversion, no evidence of any conversion, yet he's hit with the draconian penalties, which effectively doubled his sentence, 10 to 12 years to over 20 years, 21 years. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Blankingham.
Good morning. I'm Brad Blackington. May it please the court, I'd like to first talk about Rodrigo Soto Piedra's case. He was found accountable by the district court for the distribution of over 150 kilograms of powder cocaine. The evidence came primarily from the agent's recitation of the statement of Susana Ramirez. Susana Ramirez had indicated that she had purchased between 5 and 7 kilograms of cocaine per week from Soto Piedra from April through December of 2004. We don't just have that evidence alone. It was corroborated. And her reliability was corroborated from two parts. First of all, she was the informant who executed a controlled buy from Rodrigo Soto Piedra for a half kilogram of cocaine, proving that, yes, she could buy cocaine from Soto Piedra. Secondly, during wire surveillance over Vicente Camarena's cellular telephone, Camarena is talking to his source, Miguel Hernandez, about Rodrigo Soto Piedra as a customer. And Camarena says, yeah, he's a really good customer. Last year he used to get five kilograms of cocaine and sell it in 2 days. So we don't just have the statement of Susana Ramirez alone. It's corroborated by statements of co-conspirators during a wiretap, and her reliability has been established because she successfully executed a controlled buy. Now, there's no evidence that Rodrigo Soto Piedra introduced about the weight of the drugs that he trafficked. He didn't testify, and he didn't give, he or any other witness for the defense offered any type of evidence to rebut the statement on the wiretap about him dealing 5 kilograms a week. So it's a preponderance standard that the district court has. There's a lot of corroborated evidence on one hand that the government has, and there's nothing that Soto Piedra introduces to rebut the government's claim in Susana Ramirez's statement. So clearly, I think the district court didn't commit clear error in finding by a preponderance of the evidence that he was accountable for the distribution of over 150 kilograms of powder. Turning my attention to Miguel Hernandez, there is evidence from the wiretap of Vicente Camarena's phone where he's ordering 14 to 15 kilograms of powder cocaine. The question is there evidence that it reasonably foreseeable that it's being converted to crack, and is there evidence of a conversion ratio? In the intercepted telephone calls, which were S1 and S2 or the exhibits, and they are set forth in my supplemental appendix, there's evidence of a conversion ratio. In exhibit S1, Miguel Hernandez offers to deliver a kilo of cocaine to Vicente Camarena Salazar. It says if they want it for cooking, they will get almost everything back in return. It returns 95%. Cooking, according to the agent's expert testimony, was the conversion of powder to crack. The return of 95% indicated that when the powder was cooked into crack and the impurities were burned out in the cooking process and the water, that you'd have 95% of the solution left. So if you had a kilogram of powder, you'd be left with 950 grams of crack. In Exhibit S2, Miguel Hernandez again offers to deliver 1 or 2 kilos of powder cocaine and says if you want it for the kitchen, again referring to cooking, it'll give you a return of 9, which the agent said was a 90% conversion ratio. Most tellingly, in the call that's shown in Exhibit S3, Miguel Hernandez says, I have a kilogram available, but he says it's too low for the kitchen, meaning it isn't good enough to be cooked into crack cocaine. So Vicente Camarena Salazar doesn't want it. That shows that the conversion of powder to crack is of critical importance in the dealings between Miguel Hernandez and Vicente Camarena Salazar. And I would submit that there is no evidence, of course, that either Hernandez or Camarena were converting this stuff to crack. But to require evidence of that in that type, this type of case, would turn the law of conspiracy on its head. Because, of course, the law of conspiracy doesn't actually require the crime to be completed. The crime's in the agreement. And if the agreement is we're going to obtain powder cocaine so that somebody down the road can convert it to crack, and that's explicit in the negotiations and in the agreement.
Is there any evidence of an agreement, though? That's the issue, isn't it? I mean, you talked about a lot of sales talk, but that doesn't make an agreement.
They pled guilty to a conspiracy to distribute powder cocaine over 5 kilograms. And then the question is it part of the agreement, and is it part of their understanding? Is it reasonably foreseeable? Is a part of that agreement that some of the powder would be cooked into crack? And I'd suggest we interdicted in that investigation on June 7th 2 kilograms of cocaine from Miguel Hernandez. And it isn't the government's obligation to kind of let that pass through and see if it gets converted into crack cocaine.
When they pled guilty, was the crack cocaine a part of the admission and the was that part of the government's proffer?
It was part of the government's proffer, Your Honor. Now, the district court asked Miguel Hernandez, do you agree with this? Is it truthful? And my recollection is that defense counsel stood up and said, well, we agree that he was part of a conspiracy to deliver over 5 kilograms of powder, but we're not agreeing to a lot of other things. So it was part of the proffer.
That let stand, that response?
Pardon?
And that response was all that was made, nothing further?
That's my recollection, Your Honor. I'd have to look. The plea hearing was about a year and a half ago. Again, we went to the sentencing hearing, and there was no testimony offered by Miguel Hernandez to contradict the agent's interpretation of what was going on in the telephone call of the conversion of powder to cocaine to crack cocaine. So I think in this case...
no surprise at the sentencing hearing that crack was an issue. Or was the government was seeking to base the sentence on?
Yeah, I had filed a notice of expert witnesses before this was going to trial, indicating that the references to the return of 95 and the return of 9 involved the conversion of powder to crack cocaine and the language about the kitchen. So that shouldn't have been, and I think in the pre-sentence report, that interpretation was spelled out thoroughly. And in this case, likewise, it applies with Soto Piedra. In the Artley case that I cited in my brief, this court held that where you have a pre-sentence report, that the defense has the burden of showing evidence to be unreliable for it not to be considered by the court. That's a little bit of a strange opinion, but it is one this court's rendered. And I'd suggest that the reliability of the evidence has been established. It's been shown with Miguel Hernandez that the conversion of the powder to crack is a deal breaker. He's willing to deal when there's a return of 90 to 95%, but if it's too low for the kitchen, he doesn't want the powder cocaine. So since that is so intrinsic to their agreement and their conspiracy that this conversion occur and occur at a specific ratio, it's foreseeable. This isn't the type of case where we're making the argument that, well, yeah, you know, this might have hit the street and some guy three levels down might have converted it to crack. This is an explicit part of their negotiations, and I see my time's up.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honor, I've used my time on behalf of Mr. Soto Pietro. The court doesn't have any further questions. I'll ask Mr. Roger.
Okay. You have 1 minute, Mr. Carter. Thank you. Thank you, counsel.
Very briefly, Your Honors, I would just like to make the point, while Mr. Blackington talks about these three references to cooking and in the kitchen and returning 9.5, it is clear from the sentencing transcript that Agent Davis also testified unequivocally that purity and quality is important to those who are purveying powder cocaine, and that references to how much it returns in the kitchen and how much it returns in cooking can also be references to purity and quality of powder cocaine. So at that juncture, I believe we're in equipoise, if you will, as to whether we're talking about quality of the powder or whether we're really talking about conversion, and I think we go over that equipoise. It's more likely than not that we're only talking about quality when we consider the fact that no one ever cooked anything into crack. That is the key. And under the guidelines, we can only be responsible for reasonably conduct of others that actually occurs. Thank you, Your Honor. My time has expired.
Counsel, you took this case by appointment, did you?
I did, Your Honor.
Thank you for your helpfulness to the court and your representation of your client.
Thank you very much.
Counsel.